Welcome back, Gallatin Valley. You're listening to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman, FM 95.9. I'm your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy. In the last half hour, we talked with Dr. Lynn Camella, author of Vibrator Nation, about how feminist sex toy stores of the 1970s helped change the role that sex stores play in our communities in terms of providing sex education and information and products. Now we're talking with Billy McWilliams and Natasha Quimby about Erotique in downtown Bozeman. Erotique is actually very busy today, and so for this conversation, we decided to walk across the street to the beautiful Baxter Hotel and go up to the mezzanine for this conversation. There is music playing in the background, so you may hear that. You may hear people coming and going, but I actually love the symbolism of it. I've had so many great times here over the years, and so here is Erotique in something that could not be more the heart of downtown Bozeman. Billy, I want to start with you. Erotique is the first sex shop I ever walked into. It was back in 1981. It was actually called Ms. Kitty's then. Could you start by telling us just a little about the history of the store?
Yeah. Hi. I'm so glad it was you for your first time. That was a time ago. Yeah, Miss Kitty's was started in 1981. You're one of the first. Thanks for keeping us in business. And it was started by this man named Father John Bauer. Father John Bauer was a Catholic priest. He was ordained in Bozeman in 1961. He became head of Catholic Charities in Montana in 1968. In the mid-70s, he moved to Bozeman, came out as a gay man, started the sociology department at high school, and the first gay rights organization, which became QSA. I believe it's probably one of the first gay rights organizations in Montana. In 1981, to downtown Bozeman's great consternation, he opened up a bookstore and got a business license. Then he got into a big, big, big fight, and the city backed down and were the only adult store that you could have in downtown Bozeman. So Miss Kitty's ran from 1981 to 2007, then I was opportunity to open up a store, Erotique, and so with the last 12 years, with the great help of Natasha, we have prospered.
So you say Erotique. I've been saying Erotique. I will correct my ways.
I don't think it really matters.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
So Natasha, you have been a force at Erotique for a long time. Can you talk to us about how you first came to Erotique?
So I was introduced to Billy through one of QSA's presidents. We were going to Erotique, doesn't matter.
Okay.
QSA stands for Queer State Alliance, and it's the gay rights organization based on campus.
Yes.
Well, and Natasha, I think I met you through QSA. I was the faculty advisor for a hot minute.
Yes, correct.
But QSA, when I first moved back here, I want to say it was almost 15 years ago, it seems like, I feel like the very first time I ever saw you was QSA had organized a panel. It was probably for Coming Out Day, and you spoke at the panel, and it was my first queer contact being back in town after decades away, and I was like, oh, how welcoming. So thank you, 15 years later.
Oh, well, I'm glad it could be a part of your reintroduction into the queer community of Bozeman.
Thank you.
So I believe it was Josh who brought me into Erotique to talk to Billy. Actually, it was Miss Kitty's at the time, because we were looking for donations for an event that we were having. I think it was like a dance or something like that. And so I was introduced to Billy very briefly, and then I recall when Miss Kitty's closed that there was something put out in the QSA newsletter that Billy was looking for queer identified people to work in the shop, because he wanted to have that kind of representation at the shop. At the time, I was working at my past job as a pharmacy technician, and I thought, and I'd always wanted to work in an adult store, but I had a full-time job already. But then a few months after Erotique closed,
Miss Kitty's closed.
Actually, I'm sorry. A few months after Erotique opened, I found myself to be, you know, unemployed, and I walked in and I thought, hey, well, I'll just reintroduce myself and, you know, lay out my credentials, which is I had a healthcare background and I had, you know, retail background, and I, you know, was part of the queer community, and I've done a lot of panels, and I'm very comfortable, you know, talking to people and training people, and just laying it all out. And it just so happened that a position became available in a few weeks' time. And what's interesting is I thought, well, that was a really interesting way to get a job. You know, no one ever does that. And in the 12 years I've worked there, it turns out, you know, every month someone comes in and asks, like, oh, are you guys hiring? You know, is there an opening here? And it's like, oh, so this is just how people, you know, get jobs. Yeah. So that's been really interesting, being a part of, you know, maybe I wasn't there at the, you know, opening day, but I was definitely there in the beginning, you know, just a few months after.
Typically speaking, people who come into the store, I'm very circumspect about hiring them, because it's like, sometimes you want people to be interested, but sometimes they're too interested, and sometimes there's agendas, and sometimes it doesn't fit their profile. Natasha stood out. Her conversations, her maturity, she checked back, she was professional. It's like, yeah, that typically, it's word of mouth. So, yeah, she stood out.
Well, you know, for the first half hour of this show, we interviewed Dr. Lynn Camilla, and she was talking about how incredibly knowledgeable staff in really good, high-quality sex shops are, and that often they do have health backgrounds, and they relate well to people, and they really care about education and all that kind of stuff. Natasha, I want to talk a little bit more about, I feel like you personally, I mean, you as an individual have been a force in this community in terms of nurturing not just sort of a pro-sex perspective, but really nurturing the queer community through times of transition. And I'd love to talk about your...
No pun intended.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to talk about your advocacy and how that kind of overlaps with your role at Erotique.
Well, I think when I first started going to QSA, I was just going as an attendee. I was relatively new to Bozeman myself, and I mean, I'd been here for a few years, but I hadn't ventured out because I was focused on school and work, and so that didn't allow me a whole lot of time to be social. But I found myself getting out of a relationship and feeling especially lost because I didn't have a whole lot of support here, and I was really looking for a community who would allow me to feel how I feel, and I wouldn't have to feel like I had to justify my feelings or be afraid of telling them, you know, if I started to break down, and if I used a pronoun, that no one would give me, you know, like, scathing looks or anything like that. And this was, you know, the early mid 2000s. So, you know, it wasn't like it was just a few years ago where things have really become much more accepting. It was still, at least in my perspective, things were still very quiet, and, you know, I don't want to say it was backdoor, you know, back alley kind of secrecy, but it was still very super discreet. And so I was just attending as you would, you know, because I've never been to a meeting before, even though I had heard of, at that time it was called QMSU. But then Josh, you know, became president, a very dear, who's
Josh Hemseth, right?
Josh Hemseth, yeah. Who became a very, very dear friend of mine, who I'm still in contact with today, and who he himself has done quite amazing work beyond graduation and stuff like that.
He's a force.
He absolutely
another
is.
Another force.
Yeah, yes, definitely. And so under his, under his mentorship, I felt like I really sort of grew to become more of a leader. Sure, I feel like that's sort of a heavy title to carry, but I guess a leader. I don't have a better word for it, but really working towards making people aware of QSA. So, you know, there's those the events on campus, like Catapalooza, which is the info fair, you know, during orientation at the beginning of the year. And then there's MSU Fridays for all of the visiting prospective students during the year, and just working at those booths. And so that really forced me to be out and open about, you know, about QSA and what we brought to the table and why students should be interested in QSA as a group, and you know, what kind of potential, you know, community they can find there. So it was through that I, you know, when QSA started doing drag shows, you know, at the time before that, there was a real feeling that there's no way that Bozeman could support a drag show.
Right.
Like, who would go, you know, like, will it even fill the room or anything like that?
And what year was that?
I don't, you know what?
It's been a long time.
It's ages and ages, but I would have to go through the Facebook, you know, event pages and do the math kind of thing.
This was before Facebook in some ways.
Before Facebook really became like what it is now, before people were doing
it's
like Madge.
15 years old?
Something like that, yeah. Something like that. And I remember at the time there was a gentleman by the name of Faisal, you know, who...
I loved Faisal.
Oh, yeah, he's fantastic. And, you know, he was an international student, and he used to do drag in Malaysia, where he's from, and he always talked about how he would love to do drag and, you know, and bring that, you know, bring that type of entertainment to Bozeman. And I'm such a naysayer. I'm like, oh, there's no way anyone's going to go to a drag show in Bozeman. But then Livingston was hosting the Dragon Hoots, and we you know, we all carpooled over there, and they had met capacity. Like, we couldn't get in, and it was one of those things where we had to...
So was that at the Owl?
Yeah.
Cool bar.
Yeah, so we had to go back a few times and be like, well, will you let us in now? I mean, is it empty enough now for three measly old people? And so we got in, and, you know, we were watching this fantastic show. It was, and, you know, here's Faisal next to me just dying to, like, I want to do this in Bozeman. I want to do this on campus. And so the next event we did was just a regular old dance, but we had, like, an intermission for him to do a 5-minute number or something like that, and so many people, it had such a great response that the next show we did, the next dance we did, it had, you know, like 5 performers at the beginning, and then it got to the point where it's like, well, let's try a whole show. And again, the naysayer that I am, I'm like, no one's gonna see a show. It was packed. It was unbelievably packed, you know, and I was just blown away by, you know, the interest in it. So yeah, it was just... it was amazing. And so I was there at the beginning, though I wasn't the one who was heading that up, but Faisal and Joe Twitchell, who also, you know, started that the Revolution Charity Drag Show, they, you know, they have since graduated and moved on, and so I've just sort of maintained that and kept up the fire burning for that, and, you know, just getting out the word and, you know, making the arrangements and getting the room ready and getting the volunteers, because it's very labor intensive for sure to put on a production like that.
It's really difficult to wrangle drag queens and kings, as she's good at it.
Yeah.
And my experience with the history of Lambda, then QSA, became QSA, is a good leader would come on, and then they would go up, and then they would graduate, and it would definitely be a big lull.
Yeah.
And the continuity that Natasha brought was consistency in terms of the drag show, the Revolution, and then it went into the Rainbow Ball. So what ended up happening is what she developed, the finances from both of those events, particularly the drag show, what that did was give continuity and financial strength to QSA. And that is what makes QSA so successful, and that's her leadership.
What I will say is that as the years have gone on, I've taken further and further, you know, back seat, because I'm now at an age where a lot of the students coming in are, you know, considerably younger than I am, but the new leadership is pretty amazing in of themselves, and, you know, keeping
sure
it going
are.
Because the truth is that I haven't been leadership in a very, very long time, and that's like an official role, you know, either being the president or the secretary or what have you, and so we've had some pretty strong leadership to keep it going, and so my contribution has been pretty much just the, you know, some of the events that they've held. You know, and I do that on behalf of QSA, though people attribute it to me as like, these are my events, but they're not. They're just something I do for QSA. It's my contribution.
Well, so I happen to know that Billy and I will both be turning 60 in about 6 months. You are nowhere close to that. Billy told me once that, like, we're still important. We just play a different role than we used to play. And it sounds like you've been an advocate in the community long enough that you've transitioned in that way, and
well,
no
put.
Pun intended.
Yeah.
and that a mark of a good leader, in a way, is that the people sort of coming behind you say, we did this ourselves.
Mm.
You know, so it's not like you did something for them. If for people who are just joining us, you are listening to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman. We are talking today with Billy McWilliams and Natasha Quimby, sort of, kind of, about Erotique in downtown Bozeman and about the role that Erotique and sex-positive people play in our community. I wanted to ask you all, both of you, about some of the changes that you have seen over time. Billy, for you, it's been like 30 years, right? And Natasha, at least...
Yeah, 35 years.
So you were, Natasha, you were mentioning Faisal.
Mm-hmm.
And so this must have been 10, 12 years ago, maybe 12 years ago. I remember being on campus late at night when I was working at the university. And Faisal came walking through the cafeteria in the sub in full drag, looking gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's cool, and wow, that's brave. And at that time, QSA was pretty small. I actually went up to like a transgender day of remembrance up at UM in Missoula, and they had so many resources that we didn't have down here. Things are a lot more robust generally now here, which I think is great. But I'd like to hear from both of you about the changes that you've seen over time in Bozeman and in the community and across generations.
It's really interesting because I recall when Faisal was, he would have occasion to go out and drag, and he really enjoyed being creative in that way. What's interesting now is that there are other leaders who have taken on the mantle and really progressed how drag is seen in Bozeman. You know, for years and years, it was QSA's two shows a year, but... last year, you know, there's a Countship that has sprung into action here, which is like a sister organization from the Count in, from the court in
like the Imperial Court?
Yeah, the Imperial
Okay, cool.
Sovereign Court of the state of Montana,
yeah.
Which is based in Missoula. So the sister organization, the Countship, I believe started, you know, early last year or late 2018. I can't really recall, but they've been doing monthly events, and now there's this drag troupe that does events as well. So you can pretty much catch a drag show once, maybe twice a month, every month. And so those have, as far as I can tell, have been very well received, and people are just super excited about that. But I think that's just drag mainstream as well. You know, I was watching RuPaul's Drag Race back in the years when it was first coming out, and like the images were kind of fuzzy, and you know, it was never really talked about, and all of a sudden in the last few years RuPaul's Drag Race has really blown up, you know, and people are like super into it. And I think just that mainstream acceptance and awareness has trickled into Bozeman, and so these new groups coming out and doing their own events has really, you know, fed the hunger for that kind of entertainment and
mm-hmm.
and exposure. So it's been fantastic to watch, because, you know, I'm super like reserved, and I want to see the numbers, and some people are just like, I'm one of those like put the toe in the water to see the temperature, and some people are just plunging right in. And so I think having this new group of people just go like all in has been really refreshing to see, because if it was left up to me, you know, I'd be more like, let's just kind of see how it goes, and you know, let's, you know, maybe we'll just do it every, you know, maybe once a season or something like that. And they're like, no, we'll just do it all the time, you know, whatever. And it's been great, because it's been super successful as far as I can tell.
You know, I love that you're talking about the Imperial Court, because way back in 1991, I was involved in some marriage equality stuff. Was a plaintiff in a in a marriage case, and at a time when the, if you could call it, the mainstream LGBT groups, like Lambda was fairly new, you know, there weren't a ton of them, but the Imperial Court was one of the very first organizations to step up and support us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was, and I just love that they're still around and still doing great stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've been, I mean, they've been super active in Missoula for ages and ages, and so we're just seeing that kind of representation here in Bozeman, you know, within the last year. And so it's great to be on that level.
Yeah.
It seems like it's morphing into more than just drag. There's drag, there's burlesque, there's aerialist. It's a real flowering of sex positive feminist culture that is developing in a huge way. I love that.
So Billy, could you talk to me a little bit more about the role that you think, hope, believe Erotique plays in the community, especially around positivity, so being pro-sex and sexual health and feminism,
sure,
and pro-gay, all that good stuff.
It's interesting. Let me tell a little story. In the late 80s, the late 90s, I was involved in HIV prevention because of the AIDS crisis. It was pretty bad. You didn't know how long it was going to go and how deep it was going to go. There was a lot of fear. It was terrible. In 2001. There was an anti-gay incident at MSU, and Judy Shepherd came to MSU on December 1st, 2001. That was Matthew Shepherd's birthday, 3 years after he died.
Right.
And really poignant. Part of the thing that Miss Kitty's did at the same time as others at MSU in the community brought her to town because of this anti-gay incident. And I had a chance to talk to her the next day, and I'm like, this isn't changing. And she said, you know, Billy, Bozeman is Laramie. And she said, we're done. Her and I are the same age. But the young people, they're going to change everything. So here in 2019, we're talking 18 years later.
2020 now.
2020, hell yeah. So the thing about it is, it's like you can see the big changes that are happening. And when you talk about acceptance of a safe place, we hope that Erotique as a place can be whoever you are, however you are. And so it's exciting to see the growth of the LGBT community and the growth of the kink community. When you talk about sex positive and feminism and orgasm equality and good communication, it seems like there's a sea change. For example, the other day, this nice, not so nice young man said something. Oh, you're a such and such with the word F, and I said, "Well, what if I am?" And he freaked out, and as he left, I said, "Well, you're better than this." And he threw a snowball. But the big thing about it is that the young men that were with him, and the young woman that was with him, they were both trying to shut him down because that was so wrong.
Yeah.
And then the woman came back and said, "Look, you can get him in trouble if you want." I'm like, no, this is over. But here's my point. Society has moved on. And that person is very, very much an outlier. So you see a lot of less hatred. And talking with young folks and lecturing at the human sexuality class at MSU, I think we're in for some really interesting times. I think when we talk about the LGBT community, what they're doing is they're communicating a brand new way to love and a brand new way to have relationships. I'll throw kink in there too. The thing about it is, it's like, this is something I never would have believed to happen. I would have never conceived that we would have literally changing the nature of what human relationships are in the last 20 years. Fastest revolution of something important like that I've ever seen. I think it should be a model for the future, for other things.
Well, I feel like young people are becoming the leaders on so many things right now. Can you talk to me a little bit about what about your roles in the store as essentially sexual resources or sex educators? Like, what kinds of questions do people have when they come in, or what information do you realize, like, they might not even know to ask, but you can tell them something? What kinds of issues come up or topics?
I find after a long time that most people are sexually normal and they feel guilty about it, and they shouldn't. They're normal. They come in and they say, "You might think I'm weird." And I go, "Oh, God, please be weird.
Please be weird."
And then they say something, and I think to myself, "Oh, that's not weird. That's normal." So there's a hunger for a good conversation about sexuality that's frank, but it's also really sensitive to the person who's there. Everybody's got different boundaries. Everybody's in a different arc in their life. So you really have to read who they are and listen to what they have. And their real hunger, just say it. And when you talk about healthy sexuality, you talk about honesty. Honesty with yourself, honesty with your partner, honesty together. So it's like, that's what you try to foster. And then I think you get them where they are, and you push a little bit maybe, but don't push too much. And they just want to know. Just give me the information. And I think Natasha's really good at doing that.
Natasha, talk to me about that.
What's interesting is I find that a lot of people want a one-size-fits-all answer. And I think what they're not expecting is that when they come in asking for assistance, I'm going to ask a lot of very personal questions. But that's because I want them to get a good experience, that when they go home with a product, if they should happen to buy something, that they're happy with their choice. But the only way we're going to get to that is if I help them weed through all of the options they have. You know, it's a very small shop, but we pack a lot into it because we're the only shop in town. And so we kind of have to be everything to everyone, and that's really difficult to do with our minimum, our very meager square footage. And I always joke, you know, that I need a bigger store because
That'd be great.
Yeah, because the physical location is too small for my ambitions, you know, kind of thing. And so, you know, people get overwhelmed by all of the options we have. And so I ask them questions. I'm like, well, you know, if we start talking about, you know, what your needs are, we can start whittling away all of this other noise and just focus on the things that are going to best work for you based off of the parameters you've given me. And so that makes it a little more, it makes it easier for people to just sort of digest that kind of information when they're presented with 5 options versus 50 options, kind of thing.
It's funny when they say, "What's the best thing you have?" It's like, right?
And that's a really tough, there's no such thing as the best, you know, because
right,
that's different for everyone.
For everybody.
Right. And it's interesting because, you know, you have young people come in, you know, and then who are getting their first toy, and then you have, you know, middle-aged people coming in getting their first toy. And it's like, you know, we all start at different levels, but that doesn't matter. You know, it's you're here now, and that's what matters. So it's been really fun. I love doing consultations for people. I get much more out of that than just basically, you know, ringing them up. You know, that's right. Not nearly as fulfilling for me, but I love researching product. I love finding what's the best version of that product that I can get at, you know, a price point that I think will benefit as many people as possible. But I've just been really, really excited about seeing how the store changed. Because when I first started, we had a lot of products that we don't carry now, because there's so many companies who've seen this evolution in, you know, adult pleasure products, that they have a more boutique look to them, and they're using better quality materials, and just they're super high tech, and they, you know, some are touch sensitive, and, you know, they have heating elements and
all remote control.
It's all, yeah, fantastic. So it's been
fun. Natasha Quimby and Billy McWilliams, thank you so much. I really wish we could keep talking here in the mezzanine of the Baxter Hotel, so central to downtown Bozeman. I know that we're out of time, and you need to run back across the street to Erotique. Listeners, you have been joining Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman FM 95.9. Thank you.